Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
Woo-hoo! This is Penn Jillette, and I'm sitting here in Las Vegas on a very, very exciting Penn Jillette show on the Big Free FM. This is going to be a very, very big show. I'm here with Michael Goudeau, and it's time to give our it's time. And I know we have a lot of people saying, "Tell the end of the monkey story." I was rushed. You know, yesterday was story time, and I'll get to the end of the dwarf and the monkey because I get to say the word monkey. And whenever I get to say the word monkey, I am happy.
Your eyes light up.
I'll get to the end of it, but I want to just ballyhoo this.
Okay.
I want to get the ballyhoo out of the way. We have Chris Bliss coming on now. Chris Bliss would not go on Dateline. Chris Bliss has not been anywhere talking about his viral video. He hasn't talked about it anywhere, the juggling to the Beatles thing. But he will be on, and we're going to talk to him about mostly politics. Three jugglers talking about politics. He has this great thing called mybillofrights.org. And if you're listening on a computer or you're near a computer and you go to mybillofrights.org, you'll be able to read along while we chat, because that's what I have open on my computer. But we'll have Chris on soon. And I want to finish the story. So anyway, we got the monkey, which is Tarzan. And I think I explained.
You don't think you need to recap the whole
thing? I'll recap the whole thing.
Just do a quick
version. Recap the whole thing. I'm having a party at the Slammer, okay? I won't tell the other story. That story, if you missed it, you missed it. You're done with that one.
That one's over.
This story. I'm having a party at the Slammer, and I have invited, accidentally, a monkey, which is a chimp. And I know a chimp is a gorilla. It's a great ape, right?
Old world.
Old world ape without a tail.
Yeah.
New world, he'd have a tail.
Yeah.
It's not a monkey. It's an ape.
Not a monkey.
But the word monkey is funnier.
It's funnier.
So we use the word monkey.
Chimp. Kind of funny.
Yeah, chimp is funny too.
Chimp.
And we talked about how this 80-pound monkey has the strength of a 300-pound man. Dangerous things. And they bite your fingers off. That's what they do. And the way we control monkeys is that we fool them into thinking that we're part of their pod and that we're bigger and have more power than them. We are bigger than them. We don't have more power. And monkeys, because it's bred into them to have to go for dominance, won't go up against me. Tarzan weighs 80 pounds. You know, I weigh 280. He's not going to come at me. I'm a big silverback to him. And when I say to him, "Get me a Diet Coke out of the fridge," Tarzan runs and does that and changes his own diaper and everything. Perfect. And we're talking about how all the women love the monkeys because the monkeys feel them up in public and they kind of get off on that. Women that I know. Not saying women in general, women that I know. And then some women are upset because they can't tell the monkey what to do. We covered all this. But then I also invited our friend Arturo, who is from Mexico and who is a little person. He's a dwarf. I believe the word little person is more insulting to a dwarf than the word dwarf. I've always thought
he's a full person.
But it doesn't matter.
A short guy.
It doesn't. Exactly. He's just a short guy.
He's 100% person.
I also don't like the word African-American. You know, I think that the hyphenate should be taken away. They're not African-Americans. They're Americans. I think the black is good and goes with white. But no one agrees with me. I go with them. They don't agree with me on dwarf. I go with little person. But Arturo himself calls himself a dwarf, so I've invited dwarf to the party, and Michael Goudeau.
And me.
Who worked at Ringling Brothers Barnum Bailey Greatest Show on Earth for years, said to me, "Oh, man, I thought you were circus." This is my impersonation of you.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
"I thought you were circus, man. You invited a dwarf and a monkey to the same party?" And I said, yes. Yeah. So I called Arturo, planning on uninviting him to the party. I am such a scumball that I was willing to tell a Mexican dwarf he couldn't come to my party because I thought the monkey. I thought the monkey would be more fun. That's what I thought. I was going to throw his ass out of my party.
You turning down a person coming to the party in preference of a monkey.
Exactly.
I just want to make that clear. Let's get that out in the open. You're inviting a monkey over a person.
That's the kind of scumbag I am.
Okay.
I think I'm not supposed to say scumbag, am I? Scumball. That's the kind of scumball I am. But I'm a cowardly scumball, because when I actually got Arturo on the phone, he was excited about the party. Excited. I said cited. He was excited
That's
about
he
the party.
Said it.
I backed down. I said, okay, come over. So the idea was that we were going to – Michael Goudeau says that we're going to introduce the dwarf to the monkey. The monkey's going to be in the arms of my girlfriend at the time, who was a situation comedy actress. She was going to be holding the monkey.
Clearly.
We would then bring in the dwarf. And then Godot gathered together a vigilante squad of about four of us who had knives. And we made a solemn pledge in a back room with Michael Godot as our leader that if it came to a choice between saving the dwarf and saving the monkey, although I made a different choice and invited to the party, the other choice with the knife was we would kill the monkey with tools in order to save the dwarf.
If it got that bad.
If it got that bad.
If it got out of hand. Yeah.
And Arturo's plan was there was a pool, and monkeys hate water. So he was going to dive into the pool. He was wearing had no wallet, no watch, going to dive into the pool. So that's the plan. This is what's happening at the Slammer. Now, remember, this is all people who are stone cold sober. You know, never had a drink in my life. There's no alcohol ever at the Slammer. Stone cold sober. And we are introducing a monkey to a dwarf in my backyard. And monkeys are really sweet, you know, and they're a good size and you hold them. They wrap around you and they're cuddly and they're very, very pleasant. But they're strong and they're mean and they can kill you. It's an interesting situation. So my girlfriend at the time is holding the monkey. And around the corner comes Godot's vigilante squad, four of us. I think it was Provenza, you, me, I forget who else. Probably Matt King or somebody. With weapons.
Yeah.
We had weapons. And then around the corner comes Arturo, the dwarf. It was one of the most amazing things I have ever seen in my life. Do you remember the
switch on the monkey?
Remember the anti-drug commercial way back from when we were kids when it said, they say people who are hooked on drugs have a monkey on their back. Isn't that cute? Then it goes, and there's that face of that monkey. Or in The Exorcist, there's that quick, brief shot of the monkey. That goes when you go into the subway. You probably don't know that, but there is one. And there's that thing where monkeys, which are we anthropomorphize, right? Because they have cute features. We've talked about this before. They have cute features. They're really nice. They're
they
fuzzy.
Seem like
they're
us. Furry.
They seem a lot like us, and they also seem really sweet. Maybe nicer than us, you know, because they're nonverbal.
Like Teller.
Like Teller.
Teller's nicer than us.
Teller's a lot nicer than us. And so we figure this monkey is kind of cute and kind of nice. And then it was amazing. The dwarf came around the corner and it was like, Kah! And all the teeth bare, right? And the monkey, which is being held tightly by my girlfriend, he just moves her arms that are holding him like there's nothing. And he jumps down. And now we are in my backyard with weapons planning on killing a goddamn monkey in my backyard in order to save a Mexican dwarf. Now, you freeze frame that right there. And you say, how did the son of Sam and Val de Gillette in Greenfield, Massachusetts, a kid who went to Boy Scouts, who played Little League, who did well at least in grade school before everything fell apart as he got a little older, how does that kid end up at a much too big house in Las Vegas with a monkey and a dwarf with a knife in his hand to kill the monkey? How did that happen, man? I mean, that is harder to understand than like the Mendez brothers or something. You know? Just impossible. Just, And then Arturo just hauls ass like you wouldn't believe. And he makes
fastest
it to the house.
Fastest dwarf you ever saw.
Fastest dwarf you ever saw. And the monkey, it's amazing. The monkey is slowed down a little bit, just confused by us. He makes it into the room and then monkey's
slips the other way.
The switch goes back on, and instantly he's grabbing nipples again and reaching down, you know, reaching up skirts and down jeans, and it's back to happy. So we did the whole rest of the party moving, you know, like it's Kevin Costner and Bruce Willis at the same party, moving them from one room to the other. So, you know, Arturo would say, I have to go to the bathroom, man. So, the monkey's out there. Move the monkey here. Move him around. And later in the day, we had Arturo on a bar stool. Remember that?
Yes.
Arturo on a bar stool, which put him up to normal height. And we had Tarzan outside of the window, looking in the window, and there was no hostility towards Arturo. So we, because we are nuts, and we're dangerous nuts, after almost having to kill a monkey with knives to save a Mexican human being, We then opened the door and let the monkey in again. We let the monkey in. And this was in a closed space where he couldn't run away. And I remember the monkey. It was this great thing. The monkey is looking at Arturo sitting on the bar stool, kind of going, like going, is that a short guy? Is that a short guy whose ass I should kick? Or is that a tall guy who dominates me? And looked at Arturo. And Arturo, of course, was scared spitless sitting up on the bar stool. And we've left him. I mean, no man is an island, but this dwarf is on a bar stool.
He's on his own.
He's got no place to go. And then they coexisted peacefully. The lion laid down with the lamb. The monkey laid down with the dwarf. They were all very, very happy. And then Godot, who is one for crazy inventions, said, next party we need to have painter stilts and put the dwarf on painter stilts. You know, they put you up about 3 feet so that he's tall and, you know, pull the pants down over him and have him walk around on painter stilts.
Monkey fix.
Yeah. What's that?
Monkey fix. It's the monkey fix,
Monkey fix, yeah. Have him walk around.
That's our new product. That's what we're going to call it, monkey fix.
But the only problem with that is if you're going to a party and you're billboarded as there's going to be a monkey there and a dwarf, and you get there and the dwarf is 5'10", you know, and he's wearing painter stilts, so you've got a dwarf on stilts, then the party has to be ballyhooed in a different way. You have to say, come on to the party over Penn's house. We're going to have a monkey and a Mexican. That's all he would be, would just be a Mexican. Because a Mexican on painter stilts is a Mexican. So that is the story, how it ended from yesterday, of the monkey and the dwarf. And
there was no bloodshed.
There was never another party because the man who owned Tarzan also owned a tiger that ripped off a guy's head and killed him.
Yeah, but so, it wasn't involved with us. We were not there.
Nothing to do with it.
We were miles.
Although
from there.
We did want to, you know, have the tiger come to a party too.
Fortunately, he turned that down, didn't he?
We also gave him money to get out of town,
and he never paid us back.
Never paid us back. So
see him, smack him.
If you see him,
you know any tiger,
smack him down. yeah, and the tiger was not Monocore. Happy Jack's all excited. He's going to all wrap up. No.
I rode that tiger.
You rode a
tiger? I rode that tiger. Yeah. Before the accident, not after. I think after the accident, not a lot of people got near him.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing.
This is the tiger that was intentional.
He would do like photo shoots and stuff. You know, he was with models. And this is the tiger that we used.
He was preparing for a photo shoot that morning, actually.
And we did the Jay Leno bit with the tiger. We didn't end up using that tiger. We rehearsed with that tiger. And everybody thought I was a goofball because when they brought the tiger in before it was chained up to the big chain, I insisted on being in another room with the door closed because I just think that wild animals can kill you.
You're much smarter than the rest of us who stood in there and petted the tiger while they put the chains on him.
I think it's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea.
I think that being around wild animals, and elephants kill you like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of animals can kill you. A lot of animals can't. But a lot of animals can.
What's your party thing?
My party what animal? Game, I don't want to play this now. But one day when we get nothing to talk about, I want to have people call in and tell me the animal they can kill, the biggest animal they can kill with their bare hands naked. What's the biggest? A little hint when you're playing this party game: stay away from predators. They're gonna have a better chance against you. Go with prey. No, you can always go with human beings. A big fat guy is the right answer, of course. But non-human, the biggest animal you can kill
outside of your species.
Outside of your species, trying to get an aquatic
no tools
animal up on stage. No tools, no nothing. Just you with your little Houdini flapping around as you run, butt ass naked, little Houdini bouncing. What's the biggest animal you can kill? Zeke Zabrowski, who works on our crew, says that he could kill a cow. Don't not think so. He says he would reach in, he would punch it in its eye and reach into its brain and kill it. I offered him $2,000 to kill a cow. And I would get the cow and we would do it and they'll film it for some weird animal stuff. But I was really afraid that Zeke would get killed and that I would be liable. I didn't care about him human. So Chris Bliss is not a juggler. He's a comedian. He's a juggler. And he did this thing ages ago, which was to Golden Slumbers and so on, mm-hmm. of the Beatles. And it came out, and it was just the most annoying video in the world. It's a guy doing three balls.
You think it's more annoying than the piano video? Have you gotten the piano one?
Which one's it? The bouncing?
Yeah.
Oh, the juggling thing.
Yeah. Just juggling annoying videos.
There's a lot of annoying juggling videos. And I, the instigator, got Jason Garfield, who's a very, very bitter cellar dweller of a man and a fabulous juggler. Chris Bliss is a lousy juggler. And by lousy juggler, I mean about as good as me and Godot. Right?
Yes.
We're lousy jugglers.
We're lousy jugglers.
Lousy, lousy jugglers. I got Jason Garfield, who's a good juggler. Not as good as Anthony Gatto.
But a very good juggler.
Very good. Not as good as Gelchenko, but a very good juggler. And he worked on a five-ball routine, and it blew up into huge proportions. We were on Dateline a couple weeks ago. Jesus Christ! Talking about the horrible animosity in the juggling world. And Chris Bliss took the high road. He would not comment on Jason anywhere, anytime. Chicken. High road is always taken by chickens.
Okay. Euphemism for chicken.
And I guess I met him once or something. I didn't think I did. We're going to have Chris Bliss on after the break we go to. We'll have Chris Bliss on. And to make it more interesting, Jason Garfield is listening in the other room. He's hanging out with my wife listening in the other room.
So he could rush in here and start pounding on us?
Yeah, he could rush in here and start pounding on us. But I think everybody agrees with everything. I think Chris Bliss agrees that he's not a good juggler. I think Jason Garfield agrees he's a bitter bastard. And I think that everybody agrees. And I'm in the middle just saying, you know, sometimes I like to cause trouble. But Chris Bliss has a project. You know, Dean Cameron, Dino, my good friend Dino, had the idea of doing Security Edition, which was Bill of Rights printed on little pieces of metal about the size of a playing card that you take with you through airport security. It's performance art.
SecurityEdition.com.
SecurityEdition.com. Edition. Edition. SecurityEdition.com. And you go through the metal detector, and when the TSA comes over and says to you, what metal do you have? You say, oh, it's just my Bill of Rights. Take away my rights. That's all that is. It's a great idea. But Chris Bliss has a bigger idea. He is trying to get a monument to the Bill of Rights every single place that they have a monument to the Ten Commandments. Every public place.
He's
not going to try to go into churches. It's a great, great, fabulous idea. So we're going to be talking to him about it. So we have on the air the person who did one of the biggest viral videos of all time. It's the Beatles. And I just found out that Ringo Starr, Richard Starkey, formerly of the Beatles, has the Chris Bliss video on his website. And I've even
that
heard.
Sounds like an approval.
I've even heard Chris claim that Sir Paul McCartney likes it. And I have heard claim that Sir Paul McCartney doesn't like anything unless there's a buck in it for him. But there's probably somebody that goes to the Chris Bliss video, watches it, and goes, oh, he's an okay juggler. Maybe I'll pick up Abbey Road.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm going to go buy Abbey Road, which is not, incidentally, on iTunes, because the Beatles are fighting. And the Beatles fighting with Steve Jobs at Apple is a big, real fight. The Jason Garfield, Chris Bliss, it's just a few jugglers monkeying around. Ties it all together. We're going to be back after this. Have a wonderful talk with Chris Bliss. We'll be back. Penn Jillette, Mike Gudeau, Free FM. This is Penn Jillette. We're back, and as promised, probably the most one of the more momentous days in radio here on Free FM. We are going to have not one, not two, but three jugglers talking politics. We have here on the phone, I think, the most famous juggler on the internet, certainly. The Chris Bliss video is a virus like herpes, making me sing Golden Slumbers in my car. How are you doing, Chris?
Hey, Pat. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Now, how have you been a juggler for all this time without either meeting me or Michael Gudeau?
You know what? It's not true. I have met you once. You did, and actually, it's probably because for the last 18 years I've been doing stand-up. and not really be. I'm an act that juggles, but I'm not a juggling act. That's just my finale. That's
we
one
all
of the funny
tried that. We've
me.
All tried that line. You know, I've been doing. I've
We're
been doing magic for 30 years. I've been doing comedy. I've acted everything else, but still in my blood, I'm a juggler, and so are you. Goddammit.
Oh, I don't mean it that way. I just mean that that's why we haven't met before. Although we have met, you did a benefit that I organized with Steve Sciarippa at the Riviera Hotel a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, whose wife was injured in a car accident.
Yeah,
Ron Schock, sure.
Yeah, Ron Schock.
Yeah,
and
Ron
you guys
Schock.
Were gracious enough to be part of that, which was an amazing show. I think that's one of the best shows I ever saw. So.
Yeah, I had to, as you know, we were doing shows and stuff, and I was I had to blow in and blow out. So that was one of the really rare shows of our, I mean, I think unique show of our career, because the part of Teller was not played by Teller, it was played by Matt King.
I was at
That's
that
correct.
And Teller had to be out of town for some reason. We had agreed to do the benefit. We wanted to do it, but Teller was really up against a wall, and Mac said he'd come in, and we did a really cool thing, because Matt King, who looks like Teller, not at all, I mean only in terms of build, did his whole act in his suit, came off, put on Teller's suit, and then we did the hand stab, and Matt King did a great job, and very few people even commented on it not being Teller, which maybe teaches me something.
Yeah, I'd say that's a position to renegotiate for you.
I would say so. So you do know, however, before we get to your Bill of Rights thing, which is all I really care about, you do know that I was behind putting up Jason Garfield to do his version of the your finale.
You know, I didn't know that, but you do have a certain reputation. So.
When
so
I see a hornet's nest,
me.
What's that?
I said you do have a certain reputation for such things, so it doesn't surprise me to learn that.
Yeah, when I see a hornet's nest, I put a stick in. And what happened was I had like 8 people send me the video, which I think puts me really a piker in this, because I think most people get your video hundreds of times. And it was sent to me by some great people, some really good jazz players, and by Phil Proctor, and they were saying, this is the greatest juggler in the world. And I read that a few times and said, it's a fine routine. He's not the greatest juggler in the world. Anthony Gatto is the greatest juggler in the world. And Jason Garfield, have you ever met Jason?
No, I haven't.
He is probably the most bitter man who's ever lived.
Oh, another hornet's nest for Penn.
I mean, he really does. He basically lives at my house. And comes by all the time. He's incredibly buff. He practices all the time. And as you know, being a juggler, you know that the people who get really good are the people who have no lives and are the most bitter. So I called him up and said, have you been getting this this Chris Bliss thing? And he said, yes. And I said, why don't you do it with 5 balls? So he then worked 4 days like crazy and put together this bitter version of your Golden Slumbers finale. And it was just great. Now, I'll let you know that he has piggybacked on your career. He's doing very, very well.
Well, to me, I'm all in favor of it. And I have a feeling that Schadenfreude must be your middle name.
Exactly. My daughter's middle name is Crime Fighter. My middle, although it did you no harm. I mean, it really is. I was talking to the guy at Dateline, Josh Mankiewicz, and he was trying to make this into, oh, because these jugglers are very, very competitive. And I said, we're just monkeying around. But
oh,
it's
they,
great.
You know, they sent me 3 emails about it, and I kept trying to tell them that, you know, they should be reading my email. They'd know what the story is here. And I tried to, you know, and they said, well, what do you think about the attacks on your... And I said, I have no opinion on it, you know. I'm trying to push the Bill of Rights. What I said is, I have no opinion. The more freedom of expression, the better. And that's all I would comment on it. So I got left out of the story, which is just fine with me.
Well, to get to that, because I don't know if you know, but there was a thing put out a while ago called Security Edition, which was done by Dean Cameron. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
It was an idea that Dean got, and then I helped him facilitate, because there was a hornet's nest that I wanted to stick a stick into. What we did was we got on playing card size metal stock, we got printed the Bill of Rights. And we called it security edition because...
Oh, no, I do know about this.
The idea is you'd put it in your pocket, go through airport security.
And they would actually confiscate your rights. Yes, yeah. I do know about this.
And it was just a performance art thing. It's called, you know, securityedition.com. So I don't know if you know, but Goudeau and I are, we're on Free FM. That's where you're talking now. And we're just nuts about freedom of speech. So it was so wacky to be sent this video because I'm a juggler and have what was interesting to me about it be your Bill of Rights project. So talk about that because that's what matters.
I agree with you. That's one of the great benefits of this thing is that it's shined a light on this project. I started a project called MyBillOfRights.org. The initial reasoning behind it was that I was looking for something positive to do, and I was a little bit tired, not of the Ten Commandments being put up wherever they've been put up. I mean, to me, that's like part of it. To me, I always thought that was a smokescreen for a grab for a certain kind of political power. I didn't really think it was about the Ten Commandments or about religion. Mm-hmm. But I got tired when they started pushing the button of this is the source of our laws, mm-hmm. because it's not the source of our laws. The
not
Constitution and the Bill of Rights are the source of our laws. And then rather than fight on that turf, I thought what I want to do is not tear something down but put something up. I was actually doing comedy about it. I was going, you know, don't
so you're in
that.
A whole different generation from us because my generation wanted to tear down and not build up.
Well, to me, it was just like if you put them up, you know, it's the whole thing of freedom of speech. The answer to freedom of speech that you don't like is more freedom of speech.
Absolutely.
My point of view was if you put the Bill of Rights up next to the Ten Commandments and let people comparison shop, it's a no-brainer. I mean, the Bill of Rights gives you, it says you're free to bear arms, you have freedom of speech, you're presumed innocence, you're told to pursue happiness, and I couldn't find a religion that gave me anything close to that deal. So that's where it started, and then all this other stuff started coming up about torture, and I mean, the Bill of Rights is also really a seminal human rights document, the presumption of innocence, the prohibition against cruel and unusual punishment, the prevention of you having to testify against yourself in court. These are all anti-torture principles.
And the remarkable thing that you can come to this country as a visitor and still have those rights.
So far.
Yeah. But I'm talking about what you're talking about, the original idea of the Bill of Rights. So
yeah,
what are you doing, and how can people help you? I want to say this over and over again, mybillofrights.org, mybillofrights.org, which also looks like mybillofrights.org.
That's why we capitalized the R, because I noticed that same thing. We just capitalized every word in there, and that sort of helps avoid that. But if they go to the site, they'll see what we're doing is we're building monuments of the Bill of Rights. And we're going to put them up outside every state capital in the United States by the time we're done. And then we're going to go to whatever, anybody that comes to us, we're going to try and provide some version of them, of the Bill of Rights to put up in whatever location it is, small town, courthouses, whatever. I mean, but we're going to start focusing on the capitals. And we're not putting up a giant plaque. If you go to the site, you're going to see the first concept board for the first project, which is Project Phoenix here in Arizona where I am. We're very close to passing the Senate. We passed the House 57-0. We're about to pass the Senate to get approval not to take public money, but just you need approval to put these things on public land. Mm-hmm. We don't take public money. We don't take corporate money. We have an upper limit on individual contributions of $250.
Why is that? Why would you take corporate money?
Well, the whole idea here is this is about the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I could call five friends of mine and say, pony up the money and we're going to build this thing, but I don't want it to be some big money, stupid vanity project. Mm-hmm. I need to get people excited and involved about restoring this document to its proper place.
So what's the upper limit?
I mean, my average contribution is running $40-$45 right now.
And what's the upper limit?
$250.
$250. Well, mark me down.
Yeah, I already did it, actually. I sent in mine. I'm higher than the average.
There's a big difference, Goudeau, okay? You did it quietly because you believe it deeply. I announced it on the radio to get credit, and I have no intention of sending the money.
Okay.
That's the difference between you and me. Okay, let's get back to the project, okay, Chris?
And we also have, this has been such an interesting ride because things that have no right to be happening, for example, even getting through the Arizona legislature out of the blue, it's a difficult process to get anybody to just do this sort of thing. We had the most liberal Democrat in the Arizona House said, I like this idea, I'll put it out there. She emailed me about 3 weeks later, said, Chris, if you really want this to pass, you should give it to the Republicans because they control things here, and they don't like me very much. And I emailed her back, and I said, Kirsten, that's nonsense. This is the Bill of Rights. You find one Republican, and I defy the rest of them to not join in. This is an American document. It's not partisan. She found one Republican, 57-0 in the House.
I was going to say, you can't really vote against this.
No, and we also have these amazing sculptors involved. We're not putting up a plaque with 492 words on. We are going to design site-specific works of art that reflect and that pull people into the document, that are friendly in a way that people can read it and sit and contemplate. This is not just going to be a giant stone tablet sitting somewhere. I've got guys down in Austin, Texas, of all places, which is the next place we're going. We're headed to Austin, which should be very interesting, because on the Texas State Capitol grounds, they have the Ten Commandments and two Confederate war memorials. So putting the Bill of Rights up there should be an interesting situation.
Hey, Chris, can you hang out while we take some commercials and come back? Because
you
I was
bet.
Only going to do one segment with you, but this is too much fun and too important. Can you hang in a little bit more?
Oh, longer? You bet. My pleasure.
It's Penn Jillette, Michael Godeau, and Chris Bliss. Incidentally, all jugglers talking about the Bill of Rights on Free FM. We'll be back right after this. Okay, we're back with Chris Bliss. This is Penn Jillette on Free FM, talking about where all the freedoms come from, which is the Bill of Rights. Chris has a site called mybillofrights.org, which is trying to put a Bill of Rights sculpture. Is that the word you're using?
I would call it a monument.
Monument.
It's going to be a variety of different designs.
And in every state capital, is that right?
That's where we're going to start, and then we're going to, you know, take requests as far as where people are willing to organize and put it up and try and make sure that this is a widely proliferated document on public lands that people everywhere can contemplate and admire. And I love the idea that the lawmakers will have to walk by it on their way into the chamber and maybe reflect on exactly what it is that they swore to uphold. Because one of the things I always point out is that, yes, Ten Commandments, fine. Bible, great book. But we put our hands on the Bible in this country, not required to, but those who do for whatever reasons, when they do to take public office, they do it to swear to uphold the Constitution. We don't put our hands on the Constitution to swear to uphold the Bible. I think it's a really important point because that's where the freedoms have come from.
Perfectly said. Are you getting a lot of coin? A lot of people giving you money?
We're doing very well for as new of an organization and as the beginnings of the outreach. We're really a little bit of stealth right now, but we're starting to do more national radio. And as soon as this bill gets signed in Arizona, I think we'll get even more attention.
Oh, sure.
And also, it's just been a matter of building the organization. There's a lot of outreach that's going on very quietly now. But once you really have that first thing passed, and we're going to go for the gold on this first sculpture. I've told these guys. We had these guys in Austin. They're amazing, Penn. If you could meet them. They're real artists. Their roots are very deep. They love the Bill of Rights. And they have 12 years training with English master stonemasons. You just don't find these kind of people anymore capable of these kind of projects. And when I called them on the phone about it the first time back in, I think this was in September, right after we became a corporation, a nonprofit corporation, I said, if this bothers you in any way, shape, or form, just tell me right away. I told him what I wanted to do. I said, we want to do this on the Texas State Capitol grounds first. And the guy starts laughing. I said, what are you laughing at? He said, you're not going to believe this. But for the last 6 weeks, my wife and I, who's his partner in the business, I've been sitting around here trying to figure out what kind of political sculpture we could put up on the Capitol grounds in Texas. And I said, how about the Bill of Rights? And they said, sounds good to us. So, I mean,
now, are you a, just to get political, and I realize this isn't part of the project because the project is about the Bill of Rights and those words and how it feels to us. But just talking to you, juggler to juggler, are you a strict Bill of Rights guy?
You know what I am? I would say I'm just sort of a moderate pragmatist, which means that if you're a conservative or Republican, I'm a communist. But my whole thing is that I happen to believe in societies and that people come together for reasons and that it's good for the benefit of everybody at some level. And what I really think is in the Bill of Rights that people have totally forgotten is that this document was a compromise. This was all the best minds of that generation who disagreed with one another on many, many different points.
On everything.
Yes. Yeah. Sitting down and figuring out what kind of document that they could create that they could all live with and that would solve the problems that they could see going forward and guarantee freedom. We've lost respect for the power of compromise to solve problems.
Well,
and
many
to me,
of them,
it's not about winning arguments, it's about solving the problems.
But many of them were against adding the Bill of Rights because they thought that that was a limiting thing as opposed to an expansive thing.
That's correct, although in the end it did win the day, and I think a lot of those people would look now and they would go, well, it's a good thing we had this, because, and you get people calling, go, well, a bunch of old white men wanted to exclude the slaves and women, and, you know, that's sort of irrelevant. The words in the document count more than anything else, and as our society has progressed throughout the history of the country, there has been not a constant arc of freedom, but there's been a progressive arc of expanding individual freedoms. You know, the Civil War, of course, couldn't be avoided. I think everybody sort of knew that at the founding of the nation, that this was something they were postponing for a later resolution, and then it wasn't going to be pretty. But individual rights have been expanded, and those principles to expand those rights are right in that document, in the Bill of Rights. And I think that you can point to that and go, this is about what these words mean going forward as much as it is about anything else.
If you could go back in time, besides buying Microsoft shares, if you go back in time to the signing of this, are there any rights you'd add to that? Any points you'd add to the Bill of Rights?
You know, that was sort of covered in the Constitution, in the ability to amend the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered because, you know, I've always thought that the separation of church and state was so important. But for me, and I'm a libertarian or maybe even an anarcho-capitalist, I believe they could have added the separation of money and state. I just think that whole commerce thing could have run totally separately, and then you wouldn't have the Commerce Clause being able to essentially invalidate the Tenth Amendment, taking so much of the states and bringing it to federal.
Yeah, I think that adjusts over time, and we'll see whether that adjusts with the new people on the court or the right way or the wrong way. That's a really hard one to tell. When you said the separation of money and state, I was thinking, yeah, it'd be nice to, because I tell my libertarian friends, they always talk about government bad, government bad, government bad. And
yeah,
I always
me
say,
too.
And I always say, you're whipping the wrong boy right now. Because the government is now completely controlled by large moneyed interests.
Yeah, well, see, I would go completely backwards on that and say that the large money is having to bend itself around. If the government didn't have the power to do what it's doing, the large corporations would not be able to use bribes and influence to get it to do that. A smaller government, you don't have. There's no reason to push it around and wrap it around your finger because it doesn't have the power to do that. When you have a government that you've given the power to do as much good as you want it to do, it also has the power to do as much bad. So I am in the libertarian camp that says government bad, government bad, government bad. I just think if you shrink the government enough, you don't have any problems with big corporations because they won't want to influence it. If it does stay to write what it should be, which is, you know, defense, courts, and police, and doesn't go into all the regulation stuff and all the kind of nanny state and controlling stuff like that, you do have the situation where the corporations kind of do go away. But it is a chicken or egg thing because either way will work.
And I think that's a pendulum thing as well. The other thing that I like to mention to people about the Bill of Rights is that I hear a lot of people talk about free markets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the argument, my conservative Republican investment counselor, because, you know, that's who I'm going to give my money to.
Sure.
She always talks about China, and I think she should be a little bit ashamed of herself for talking about China. People better not forget in this country that free societies create free markets. Free markets do not necessarily create free societies. And as soon as we start to lose these freedoms, if you don't think the money's going to go with it, you're wrong.
Well, you're not going to get me to argue with you on that. I think the first and most important thing is individual liberty, and with enough individual liberty, everything else good comes.
It gets people sitting at the table. Again, it's about even the nanny state stuff. The real thing here to be addressed is if you have enough people sitting at the table and you get a good discussion, and people treat one another with respect, and nobody thinks they have all the answers, whatever solution you hammer out that is to provide opportunity for people, which benefits everybody, winds up being what the group has agreed on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then what you have is that kind. When you have powerful consensus, problems get solved, and these other issues can be, you know, people say government should be run like a business, and I always say it should be run like a family-owned business. Because if you don't give your crazy Uncle Max something to do, he's going to play with matches and burn down the warehouse.
Well, you know, I tend to go to a, you know, you've been talking pragmatist over and over again, and I tend to go to a real moral absolutist. I think that you can take care of your crazy uncle, but if you take away his dignity, you've done something morally wrong. But I want to keep saying this, mybillofrights.org. I think it's just a fabulous idea. And I also will say, I don't know this, but has this come out at all? What is your religious belief? Should you have to keep that real quiet to keep going?
No, I'm having to answer all these questions now, Penn.
Okay.
I got a lot of people, what do you think about the Second Amendment? And the thing I always tell them is, you know, the way that I've read about it, we don't take positions on amendments because we're not constitutional scholars.
Right.
To me, it's like a whole package deal on that. And when I get asked that question, I go, hey, my understanding is that it's up to states and localities to have any regulatory power in this area, not the federal government for the most part. That's the way it plays out. But I also think the right to bear arms is the least threatened right in the Bill of Rights right now. It's highly represented. It's got a well-organized.
Come on.
And I would say the same thing about...
I'm going to bust you right here. What about the Third Amendment? Are a lot of people trying to put soldiers in people's homes during peacetime?
Well, you know, our president did happen to say that the next time that a bird flu came, he was going to just quarantine areas.
Okay.
And that set my alarm bells off ringing. And quite a few governors said, excuse me, the Constitution is not just a goddamn piece of paper, and you can't do that.
Well, you know, sadly...
But I'm very much an advocate of a secular state, uh-huh. Period. And my own religious beliefs are closer to Buddhism than anything else.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not an atheist. I always tell people, they say, well, you must be an atheist. I go, no. I try to have no beliefs.
No, you could say, well, you know, we can, you know, we've covered this on this show a zillion times. We'll get into it too much. But atheism is can be two things. It can be believing there's no God, and it can be not believing in a God. And the word encompasses both of those things. I happen to be the full-blown pedal-to-the-metal whack job who believes actively there is no God. But the vast majority of atheists simply don't believe in a God, and that's a very different thing. And when you use the word faith or belief to cover that kind of atheist, to cover my kind of atheist, you can certainly bust me on that. But there's a lot of really good people using that word that do not have faith in atheism, but merely do not have faith in different sort of myths and fairy tales that have popped up. So,
and the argument that I always make about myself personally is that I don't happen to require this kind of punitive belief to lead a good and moral life. You know,
well,
I'm not afraid of what's going to. To me, it's just like, no, you do the good because it's good. You
absolutely
don't do the good because you're afraid of punishment.
And you wouldn't make. There is the argument that can be made that you aren't even being moral if you believe in retribution, because then you're doing it for reward and punishment. The only way you can be moral is to do things because they are the right thing and not because you fear hell or are sucking up for heaven. So that argument can be made also. But,
yeah, reward and punishment, supply and demand, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a free market universe where sins are simply debits. Is that the idea?
Accounts receivable and accounts payable.
I'll tell you, man, this has just been a fabulous talk. It is, you know, it is the biggest meeting of jugglers talking about things other than juggling that's ever existed. We got Chris Bliss, who did that that viral video with the Beatles that was also busted by Jason Garfield. He's been our guest. Terrific guy. MyBillOfRights.org. And remember, Chris, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
Well, I love you, Penn.
Thanks a lot, bro. Thanks
Thank
so much,
you,
man. We'll be back tomorrow. This is Penn Jillette, Mike Lita, Free FM.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.